In the 1950s, the painter Ed Reinhardt quipped that sculpture is something you bump into when you back up to look at a painting. Nowadays, you're more likely to bump into a recontextualization of existing objects into compositions that reflect a new perception of reality when you back up to look at a video installation that's a record of someone's performance-based art. Things have changed so much that much of the art in the galleries would not have been considered art just 50 or 60 years ago. Joining us now to discuss what's happened and why are three leading art critics: Irving Sandler, who's also a historian and a curator; Amai Wallach, who is also a curator and a filmmaker; and Ken Johnson, a writer for the arts pages of the New York Times, where he covers gallery and museum exhibits. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Now, on top of the usual gallery shows, didn't we just have the annual Armory Show, the 23rd annual Art Dealers Association of America Art Show, and also a number of art fairs like Pulse as part of what was called New York Arts Week? Why so much activity at this time? Ken, you covered some. Well, you were actually out of town covering something in Virginia, weren't you?
Oh, the Picasso show. Yeah. Down, but that was a few weeks ago. But that's the best Picasso show I've ever seen.
Although I love the one, the guitars currently at MoMA.
Well, that's a little one. This is a career survey from the Picasso Museum in Paris.
It's great, great show.
Not coming to New York, unfortunately.
But what's happening here? Is this just New York doing the sort of thing that Miami does, well, that
Leonard,
Basel
it's
does?
It's become a huge art world. You know, you figure there are 600 galleries in New York. That's for openers. In my day, when I got on the art scene in the early 50s, there were 16 galleries worth seeing. And you have the thousands of artists to fill that. We only had two mediums back then, painting and sculpture. Now you have video, film, installation, performance, you name it. It's just extraordinary, the explosion in the art world and the Pierce and the Armory Show were just another sign of it.
Well, you know, there was also something called the VIP Art Fair, which was really an attempt to do art fairs on the net. And they claim that they had 7.65 million hits, which will tell you something. It's international, but it is international. And I think the Armory Show, Walter Robinson said that there were 12 shows at that point last week. I counted seven, but he found 12. So I think it was really a bad idea to put the two Armory shows together, the Piers and the Armory Show on 68th Street, which was one of the reasons. But one of the reasons that dealers do it, they call it 3D advertising, that, you know, you get all these people in one place. They all come from all over the world, so why not have all these shows?
It's also part of the cycle, the international cycle. It's between the Miami-Basel and Basel-Switzerland and other fairs in Europe.
But weren't we really the first? New York has been the center of art, I guess, ever since Abstract Expressionism or the end of World War II. But for years, artists have argued over the fact that art dealers and museum curators, along with collectors, have been the definers of the art market, and that New York has been the center of all of that.
You might also want to think of the biennials, Venice, precursors to this, all these fairs.
Although those are exhibits that people, that curators put together.
Yeah. Well, I really think that these Armory shows are now not the end of New York, but the sign of the globalization of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, New York probably had the first Armory show. I can't remember, but Chicago's had it forever, and Chicago runs the one that was at the Piers. But 2002, for the times I covered, the first Art Basel, Miami. They'd meant to have it 2001, couldn't, so they had it 2002. And that was the beginning of this explosion of art fairs. For instance, everybody who was in New York last week is now in Sharjah and Dubai for another art fair. There's one in Tokyo, there's one in Moscow, there's one in God knows where. So it's all about that it's really a global art market now, and New York is only a part of it.
But what's the difference between an art fair and just having a lot of galleries that are showing up?
Well, I think in New York, it's a good question. It seems sort of redundant because in New York, as Irving said, there's so many galleries. It's an art fair every day, and you can go to Chelsea.
And then there are other areas that also have galleries.
But I think the art world, they're like ants. They like to all come together to one place where
Yeah, that's the entertainment part of it, very important. But I think underlying it all is the enormous amount of money that's just sloshing around, looking for ways to spend it, and art is about the most quality product you can buy.
But this is tough economic times. Not for the art world?
No, I mean, that's the scary part. You know, as we all know, you know, five people in the world have all the money. And they live in Dubai, and they live in Moscow, and they live in London, and they live in New York. And those are the people that come to wherever the art fairs are and spend the money. And I think it's been a really bad thing for art. When the market first crashed, when not the market, but the economic situation crashed, Holland Cotter wrote an article saying, oh, this is great. Now maybe it's going to be like the 70s or the early 90s, and we'll get back to what art's really about. But it didn't happen because these very rich people have their way of looking at art and being marketed too.
There is the Independent Fair, I think, was an attempt which looked kind of like a return to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of handmade art. Not actually, not that much video or photography, and I think that kind of lower profile is something that artists want, and some of the hipper galleries would like to give the illusion of anyway.
You also found that on the piers, where there seemed to be a kind of revival, small but nonetheless a revival of 50s painting.
My guests are Irving Sandler, Ken Johnson, and Amai Wallach. We're talking about the current art scene. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, weren't conceptual art and performance art begun to some degree as a reaction against the kind of commodification that we're seeing today?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I guess they didn't totally undermine it, did they?
You weren't supposed to be able to sell them. Well, guess what?
Yeah. And you could sell conceptual art. You either sold the idea or you sold the piece of paper, and there were collectors there to buy it.
In some cases, it's the documentation of the idea. In some cases, with somebody like Yoko Ono, she simply writes instructions for a work of art, and then are you expected to do it yourself, or just imagine doing it yourself?
Yeah, well, I think what happened in the 60s was there was at least – I think there was like a paradigm shift when – it used to be artworks, paintings, and sculptures were an exploration of what the possibility of these traditional forms were and what quality was. And in the 60s, the measurement became a matter of consciousness raising, and it could go in all directions. And the utopian, mind-altering influences of all sorts happened, and artists were trying to respond to that.
Well, for a long time, modern art was categorized by movements or styles. You said something was abstract expressionist or surrealist or this kind of figurative or that kind of figurative. Now the categories seem to be film, video, found arts, garbage art, multimedia work, conceptual art, text, assemblage art, installation art, graffiti, performance dance, new media, even architecture. And maybe I've left a few things out. So have we simply broadened the definition of what can be called art?
Well, I actually love that. I mean, there was a wonderful show that I'm sure all of us have seen it called Online at the MoMA, which was about drawing. And it took a definition of drawing that said drawing is a line in space, a point in space. So drawing, it could be anything. It could be dance, and it was dance in this show. It could be – so when you define drawing in that broad a way, it becomes all-inclusive and makes wonderful art.
And you're also pointing to something else that's happened. We're in a situation of total pluralism. And I would add to your list painting and sculpture, because they're as visible as ever. And I think this may have had to do with the idea that any conception of avant-garde had become outdated. And now every medium can vie pretty much on equal terms.
I don't remember whether it was the Dadaist Tristan Tzara or the great collagist Kurt Schwitters who said nearly a century ago, anything an artist spits out is art. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was kind of like an anti-art statement. Today, it seems to be a description of the way the world is working.
Well, I think it's – I mean, any art can appear in almost any form. But the borders of the art world are pretty tightly policed ideologically. I mean, you see very little – there's no teabaggers art at the any of these fairs. There's a lot of kinds of expressions or sensibilities that aren't allowed in. It's a liberal festival.
Well, Irving, you said that painting and sculpture are still strong, but the Whitney Biennial, painting and sculpture were real minority representations, weren't they? Because of the Whitney Biennial?
Yes, I think so. It's because of the Whitney Biennial. Because if you walked up and down Chelsea streets and looked into your most prominent galleries there, you'd find more painting and sculpture than you can handle. Yes, everything else at the same time does exist.
I don't know if that represents what artists are doing in general, but now it seems like painting and sculpture on a pedestal are an option. Most art students are making videos at the same time as they're making paintings or whatever they're making.
I was surprised at the Whitney by how many of the videos just were documenting dance performances, and I wondered whether that was really something that belonged in a museum show or whether that belonged in at the Joyce Theater.
It just depends on who the curator is. And once again, the online show also documented Yvonne Rainer. But I do think that there's a lot more painting and sculpture out there right now because you can sell it. I really hate to say this, but it's because you can sell it. And there's wonderful painting and sculpture, but I also think that there's extraordinary art. I mean, the Whitney right now is showing Glenn Ligon, for instance, and Glenn Ligon uses anything he can use. He uses painting, he uses sculpture, he uses photographs in order to give very nuanced, complicated, contradictory ideas about what it is to be a gay black man or to be an American.
Well, his work has a message often, and when I went to art school, teachers that I had said, you want to send a message, a la Sam Goldwyn. write a book, but art is a painting or a sculpture is meant to do something else. That's no longer the case.
Well, I think most artists are coming out of MFA programs now in which they not only learn how to do stuff in the studio, but they get a lot of theory, art history. Mm-hmm. They're given a sense of what the market is like. They come out hyper aware and professionalized, and I'm not cynical at all about it, but artists have to be realistic about where and how they're going to get their work out, but they've also got to be in touch with themselves somehow.
We have to take a little break. We'll be back with Ken Johnson, who writes for the art pages of the New York Times, Amai Wallach, who's a curative filmmaker. Her most recent film was on Louise Bourgeois. And Irving Sandler, who's a historian and curator and was here not all that long ago to talk about a history of abstract expressionism. We're talking about the current situation in the art world and whatever else occurs to us. Stay with us for more. We're back with our discussion of the current art scene with Amai Wallach, Irving Sandler, and Ken Johnson. And you wanted to pick up on something.
Yeah, I'm even more optimistic than Ken is about our art students today. Till recently, I taught graduate seminars at Hunter, and these kids are smart, mean, and savvy. They really know the situation, and they, in the end, choose to do what they, as Ken pointed out, think they have to do to be artists. And the market is always hovering in the back, particularly because collectors are now moving into our graduate schools, have been moving in. And
we need to spot the hot young artists.
Buy them for pennies, hope to sell them for dollars later on. But the kids know it.
But in the past, I remember earlier in my career on this station, I had some of the Gorilla Girls on, and they complained quite reasonably about the situation. Galleries, where even women who owned galleries were reluctant to show women because they said that collectors weren't interested in women. Has that changed?
Hey, listen, when Elizabeth Murray had a show at the MoMA, her paintings were going for half of what Eric Fischel's paintings were going for. So, I mean, things have changed, but things haven't changed. By the way, there's a wonderful new film that's just coming out by Lynn Hirschberg about that. It's called Women Art – Women, Art, Revolution, War, Raw War, which is very funny, and it's about the whole
on the other hand, it's not great. On the other hand, Elizabeth Murray had a show at MoMA.
He had a show at MoMA because Rob Store insisted on it.
That's how it happens.
That's how it happens, yeah.
But women were underrepresented at the galleries and at the museums, and aren't they still?
Maybe, but the last Whitney Biennial had more women than men. I think younger women now are under 40 are incredibly adventurous and self-motivated. And there's a generation that's growing up playing athletics, boys and girls together. And I don't know. I think it's very different. But it may take another 10 or 20 years to see the results of that.
Well, I don't think it's that we had a paucity of good women artists. I think that it was the reluctance of the galleries to show them. And this is still a business, isn't it?
Right. I think that galleries are showing them more. Museums, but not all museums, are showing them more. But I think collectors are not collecting them the way they collect men. And because collectors think they're gambling and they think it's not a good gamble.
So how much of what we know that's going on is still about this as a market?
You know, it depends on who – it's your choice. I mean, there is the market. But if you're an artist, then it's your choice about how much you're going to participate in that whole market and the structure of the market.
I think we have this kind of conflict between I hate to say it, but puritanical idea that art should be pure, so that the market or art fairs look like prostitution and promiscuity and too much pleasure. And, de Kooning didn't have his first one-man show until he was 45, I think.
And sold nothing out of it.
And, you know, that you
had, but he had a lot of girlfriends, so.
Well, nobody sold anything then. There was no market.
Yeah, Jackson Pollock died, and Lee Krasner was begging people to buy some of his paintings, even though he was a famous artist at the time.
Yeah, but now there's this collapse between popular culture and art culture, where television commercials are going to galleries to get ideas to make TV commercials. Artists are looking at TV commercials to get ideas for making videos. Movies artists want to make movies. Movie makers want to do conceptual art. It's a bit. I think that there's this kind of booming imagination that's looking. There's maybe too much of it. I don't know, but that's good.
And
there's no question about the power of the market, but at the same time, there's a lot going on that is not market oriented, and within the market, things that are very fashionable today happen to be kind of interesting and good, even.
Well, I mentioned earlier. That things sell on the internet, and we're seeing social media, its role in art, art salons. There's artists creating digital work specifically for reproduction that's being made available on the internet. So there's also a democratization today.
Well, you know, I have to bring up at this point, I don't know if any of you missed it, but at Phillips de Paris, they had an auction of Stephen Colbert's portrait. And so that was the because they wanted a young, hip audience. So an art is entertainment, as Jeffrey Deitch told us. Therefore, they were able to do that. So, I mean, the internet is another tool. They're using it as another tool, and some people use it better than others. Personally, when I look at something on a computer, I can't tell what I think of it. Can you, Ken?
You mean if I look at something that's supposed to be seen in a gallery?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, no.
Especially if it's huge and the image you have is teeny on your computer screen.
But democratization, I wouldn't say that. I'd say there's just there's extension of competition. It's a Darwinian kind of competition. I mean, it's better than war or producing weapons or something, but it is kind of you do this, I try to outdo whatever I tried out, you do you.
But it was that way. It's always been that way.
Yeah, it's not saying it's new, but it's proliferated in so many – it's expanded in this amazing
way. I think artists are really asking themselves or have to if they're not, you know, why am I doing this and what do I want out of it? And if you can't or don't really want to deal with the market situation, or the market doesn't want to deal with you, then you've got to think of alternative ways, alternative groups. And there the internet can create networking, which is very interesting.
I remember when I was in art school and a friend asked me, he asked me how many people would be graduating from that school that year, and I thought it was 1,000 or so. He said, think of all the art schools in the world mm-hmm. that are graduating artists this year. This was a long time ago. I think there are a lot more even today. And then think of how many of them are going to succeed. And the odds are against you, aren't they?
Well, we live in a very privileged society. So why are artists doing that? They're not in it for the money. They would be nuts to do that.
Well, some are.
To start out, you don't know if you're going to make money. But I think it suggests a kind of widespread sort of spiritual yearning or sort of seeking that's one avenue to find meaning.
But haven't some artists like Andy Warhol and more recently Jeff Koons and some others, haven't they found ways to market themselves so that sure. They wind up being something that goes way beyond what art used to be about?
Yeah, but there are artists that they make that their raison d'etre, like Damien Hirst and mm-hmm. Jeff Koons, right. I would say. Jeff Koons also, he was on the stock market at one point, wasn't he? I don't know, some kind of a trader. But they do that, and you can do that. But that's I agree with Ken. I don't think that's why a lot of artists become artists, although I'm always distressed when I hear an artist who's 25 years old and has a gallery show and is upset because not enough sold. Mm-hmm. I never understand that. But I do think it's not a bad thing that all these people went to art school, even if they go into something else in the end.
I don't think a 25-year-old is interested in selling anyway. What they want is a review.
From the New York Times, Ken, from you.
Yep. But Leonard, you also have to ask to begin with, what are your criteria for success? Is it to be like Jeff Koons, or is it to be able to go on doing your work? And there are enormous numbers of artists who I think live very successful lives, possibly outside of the center, possibly teaching at a university, making really interesting art. And there's always the chance that at one point it'll hit New York.
I want to ask about another thing that I've been seeing more and more. The shows where the work is incredibly large. Anselm Kiefer, for example, had a show recently. I can't imagine anybody, maybe a couple of museums, buying those pieces. The place was jammed full of terrariums and paintings that were, 50 feet square. What's that all about? Is that just
Russian oligarchs?
Really?
And the Russian oligarchs actually buy those?
Oh, absolutely.
And the prints are for sale.
Uh-huh. So it's all the other stuff, the drawings and everything else that was done in preparation.
Yeah, that's how Christo finances his giant projects.
Now, there was a time when artists could shock you, and we still had a situation at the Smithsonian recently. But I remember when Rudy Giuliani wanted to close down the Brooklyn Museum because of Chris Ofili's use of elephant dung on a religious work.
And he hadn't seen it.
Yeah, well, but that's a whole other issue. Most recently, we had Marina Abramović, a show at MoMA where there were nude people standing around and it didn't cause much of a stir.
There's nothing as shocking in our world as what you can see in the movies.
So the movies have changed it all, Ken?
I don't know if that's what changed it, but I think the popular culture upped the ante on transgression in a way that the art world finds it hard to.
This is part of the death of the avant-garde. I don't think anything can shock anyone who at all follows the art world.
So the Dadaists could come along today and people would say, ho-hum, more of that.
Exactly.
No, the only thing that would be shocking in the art world is if a great teabagger painter came along and made...
You're talking about the Tea Party?
Oh, I shouldn't say that. I should say if some ultra-right-winger... conservative.
We're on public radio. You
this
know,
is
you're getting
radio.
Me
this
into a lot of trouble right now, Ken. Oh, you work for the New York Times, don't you?
Right.
I'm just saying that the
opinions expressed by my guests are not necessarily those.
It's
of
only
ours.
When
the politics of the art world are very orthodox, and that So the only thing shocking that might happen in the art world that would be shocking to people in the art world would be something that really veers away from that
it's
political
true.
Orthodoxy.
I've been to an awful lot of shows where I was told that I should protect the environment, I shouldn't be a sexist, I shouldn't be a racist. And I'm in favor of all that. Yeah, but there's something slightly boring about being told things that you'd think you already know. Who are they addressing with that?
Well, you're talking about bad political art.
But there's so much of it.
There is, but there's also good political art, which really makes you think. Think of someone like Hans Hacke, for example.
Oh, and Hans Hacke was kicked out of the Guggenheim Museum because he actually showed how many people on their board owned some kind of real estate that was terrible or something like that. So he was kicked out. But I think that really good – I wanted to bring this up because I'm so excited about it. And actually, Ken reviewed this morning Krzysztof Wodiczko.
Easy for you to say.
I know. Oh, my God. I had to write it down. But he talked about really, really good political art. I mean, so good that Ken and I were arguing about what actually happens. But this is a huge installation, which is right now at Galerie Le Long. Actually – Irving and I are both on the board of the International Art Critics Association, and we're giving this piece an award on Monday for when it was in Boston. But you're in this big, big room with high windows, and outside there are people playing, and all of a sudden there's the shadow of helicopters, and then you hear shooting, and then you hear an American soldier saying, "Oh my God, a kid went down," and the other people are saying, Gotta go now. And it's an amazing piece because you're inside this building that is under attack.
Yeah, I mean, in a gallery, it's a very intense thing. As I was thinking about The Hurt Locker, about what conventional cinema can do, and wondering how do these stand up against each other. I mean, the art world is. Galleries are these sheltered spaces where things that might seem ordinary outside of them seem extraordinary inside because you go in with certain kinds of expectations.
You really have to shift scale when you move from the real world into an art situation. And we're able to do that because we're looking for other kinds of experience.
Yeah, I think that every gallery is kind of a rabbit hole. And you go in and you get entranced and sort of transformed by the world that's evoked there.
So are you still surprised when you go around to the galleries, or isn't most of it, I kind of know this already?
That's mostly the case. But I love going around the galleries. I almost always see something.
Yeah, it's the donut in the hole. You can see 20 galleries, and one will really be terrific, and another one will be good. And you can say 18 terrible galleries, American art is in the pits. Or you could say, wow, I saw two great shows.
But that's how you know what's good. You got to see a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
Well, if you go to a provincial museum in Italy and you look at the work there, some of it is pretty good. Some of it is not so good. And then every once in a while they own a Piero della Francesca, and you realize, not every artist was as good as all the rest.
Or you make an amazing discovery and you think, oh my God, this was great. Yeah.
Well,
do we see any trends?
I thought when I was at the Independent Fair, I thought, it looks like the return of the 70s. And somebody said to me, a friend of mine who keeps up with younger artists, said, yeah, people are into the 70s now, younger artists. I think that younger artists, I have kids who are in their late 20s, and they say there's intense nostalgia for the 80s. And I can barely remember the 80s. I think in a way that progress is going – well, Warhol did the soup cans because he ate Campbell's soup in the 30s and 40s. So there's always this kind of backwards looking as we move forward, and –
I saw a lot of 50s art. That's interesting. We're generational here, too.
And I saw a lot of 80s art.
And we've run out of time.
Yeah.
And my great thanks to the three of my three guests, Amai Wallach, Irving Sandler, and Ken Johnson. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Great.